Welcome to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast, where we go inside what makes a coach a coach. The Guardians of the Game podcast is a production of the National Association of Basketball Coaches and Learfield IMG College, brought to you by Wilson Sporting Goods. And now, here's your host, Dave Odom.
Welcome back to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. Today's guest is the head coach of the Colorado Buffaloes, Tad Boyle. Tad, welcome to the broadcast, welcome to the podcast, and welcome to college basketball. Thanks for doing this.
Absolutely, Dave. Great to be with you.
All right, let's talk a little bit about your life and how you got into basketball, because I know you didn't go straight into it right away. You were born in Greeley, Colorado. And, you know, I got to tell you, when I first looked at that, I said, who in the heck is born in Greeley, Colorado? Well, the answer is Tad Boyle. What was it like growing up in Greeley, Colorado?
Well, Dave, it was a great, great town, great time. You know, I was born in 63, and I was actually born in Pueblo, a couple hours south, but moved to Greeley when I was very, very young. My father was an English professor at it's the old Colorado State College, which now is the University of Northern Colorado in Greeley. So he was a professor on campus, and I got a chance to grow up in a very quiet, you know, bedroom community, safe place, and you know, played baseball growing up, played basketball, played football, all the sports, and you know, it was kind of town where you could ride your bike. I'd ride my bike to the gym up on the college, and I wouldn't lock my bike. I'd go in and play basketball for a couple hours, come out and get on my bike and ride home and have lunch, and just great memories and great town to grow up in. And I had a chance to actually go back, and that was my first chance to be a head coach, was in Greeley at the University of Northern Colorado, and that's where I was before my stint here with the Buffaloes. So got great memories of Greeley, great friends there, and a great place to grow up.
Well, you should have great memories. As I look at your bio here, you played in at Greeley Central High School. In those days, were called the Wildcats. You went to a state championship as a senior. You earned Colorado Player of the Year honors, selected to the Converse All-America team. High school jersey was retired. You had a really good career there. But nowhere can I find who your high school coach was, or maybe coaches. And I don't know about you, I grew up in a town a lot like Greeley, at least it sounds that way. And I know one of the real influences in my life was my high school coach. Who was yours, and what kind of influence were they on your life?
Great influence, Dave. Larry Hicks was my high school coach, and Greeley Central is a great school with great history. There was a guy back in the day in the 50s and 60s coaching there named Jim Baggett, and he won, I think, 6 or 7 state championships. So Greeley Central's got great basketball tradition, not necessarily recently, but certainly back in the day. And Larry Hicks was my high school coach and gave me the foundation of who I was as a basketball player, and also you know, as a basketball coach. And you know, we'll talk about who I played for in college, I'm sure, here in a bit. But my high school coach was a defensive fundamental guy. I can still remember the Monday practices, because everybody takes Sunday off in high school, and then you come back on Monday, you have practice and get ready for your games that week. And every Monday it was a defensive minded practice, and I didn't look forward to it, because I liked to shoot the ball, Dave, in high school. I didn't like to play defense, but he made me do it and was a great influence on me. And it's funny, you know, my coaching philosophy, I can trace back to both him and Larry Brown, who I played for at the University of Kansas. So Larry Hicks was a great coach, Greeley Central. It's ironic, because I'm now coaching at the University of Colorado. You mentioned the state championship. It was my boyhood dream to win a state championship at Greeley Central, because I'd always see those banners when I would come into practice. And we won a state championship in 1981 on the very floor that I now go out and coach on every day at the University of Colorado, because that's where the state championship was held back in the 80s. And,
wow.
And so great memories of winning a state championship with your, you know, all your buddies you grow up with. And then it was onward and upward from there.
I was looking at your bio a little bit before we started the podcast today, and I did not realize that you went to the University of Kansas. And when you got there in 1981, Ted Owens was the head coach. Ted Owens, for those who are younger and don't know, was one of the real great coaches of his time. He was I'd known him a little bit from afar. I used to see him at the NABC meetings. I used to see him in the NCAA tournaments. He was always congenial. He was always easy to talk to. He was always, let's sit down and let's talk about things that are going on now. And on top of that, he was a great coach. And then he was followed by Larry Brown, who was, you know, the consummate teacher of the game and the motivator of the game. And when you talk about mentors of the game for all of us, I mean, you had two great coaches while at the University of Kansas. One of them, Ted Owens, when you went in, and then, of course, later on, Larry Brown. Tell us about how that transition went and what your recollection of each one of those coaches was.
Yeah, Dave, I'm so glad you brought up Coach Owens, because I was going to do that, and because you know, when you talk about Kansas and the national championships, Larry Brown gets a lot of attention, as he should. I mean, winning the championship in '88 and being the Hall of Fame coach that he is. But I wouldn't have been at the University of Kansas if it wasn't for Ted Owens, and his assistant at the time was a guy named Bob Hill, who went on to coach in the NBA and has affected a lot of young lives as well. So Coach Hill recruited me, you know, out of Greeley to Kansas, and playing 2 years for Ted Owens was a joy, because Ted Owens, and I'm so glad you have great memories of him, because he just turned 90 this past summer. He is the what I would call one of the great gentlemen of the game. I mean, he's just the kind of guy that you felt proud playing for, because he treated you right. He was a very good coach at the time. Kansas, as you know, is a very rich basketball tradition. There was a lot of heat on him at the time, and I felt really, really bad when I was, after my sophomore year, when he was let go, because again, we all loved him as players, and he was a great coach. Won well over 60% of his games, but you know, a place like Kansas, that's not good enough. And so they made a move, and they brought in Larry Brown. And as you know, every time there's a coaching change, you know, every player crosses their mind, do I stay, do I go, do I transfer, do I go somewhere else? And I'm so glad that I stayed, because I had a chance to play for a great gentleman and great coach in Ted Owens, but then obviously a Hall of Fame coach in Larry Brown, and Coach Brown really helped shape my basketball philosophies as well. So, you know, I graduated in 1985 from Kansas, and that year there was a freshman at Kansas, Dave, that I know you know pretty well. His name was Danny Manning. And so I tell people all the time that Danny had the privilege of playing with me for 1 year. But I say that obviously tongue in cheek, because Danny was one of the great college players in my mind of all time, one of them. So having the chance to play with him and go back to the NCAA tournament was a treat. But both Ted Owens and Larry Brown were great influences on me, and I stay in touch with both of them to this day.
Well, you didn't stay around long enough to be one of the juniors, though. I noticed that. So, Danny and the juniors.
Right.
Another guy that was a teammate of yours, is still a good friend and a great basketball coach in his own right, is Mark Turgeon.
Yep. Yeah, and Mark, it's funny, I would not be in college coaching if it weren't for Mark Turgeon. And to kind of give you a little bit of history, we played together for 2 years. And Mark was a great player at Kansas, but we became good friends when we played together. but actually became much better friends after I graduated and moved on. And a guy that I really consider to this day one of my true lifelong friends. And I was coaching high school basketball in the early to mid 90s in Colorado. And I was in the investment business, Dave. I was selling stocks and bonds and mutual funds and helping people invest their money for their retirement and their futures. And then the market would close at 2 o'clock in the afternoon here in Colorado, and I'd you know, get in my car, go to the gym, be in the gym by 3:30, and coach high school kids. And Mark was an assistant at the University of Oregon at the time, and he asked me, "Did you ever think about coaching in college?" And I'd never really given it much thought. And I was in a near fatal car accident about a year earlier, and it really changed my perspective on life in terms of, you know, how quickly it can go. And I was fortunate enough to survive it. And but I said, you know, I'm 29, 30 years old. If I don't do this now, I don't want to be in my mid 50s wondering what if. And so I took a leap of faith. And back then, Dave, you may remember, but there was a spot on every staff called the restricted earnings position. And it was you could only make $16,000 a year. And I was making significantly more than that, you know, in the investment business. But I think they offered the job to probably six or seven other people who turned it down. And I kind of got it by default. And that's what, you know, led me to the University of Oregon in my first college job.
You know, kind of quickly, let's back up just a little bit, because I don't want to pass your high school coaching. You can't believe how many people who are aspiring college coaches who are now in high school who travel that same path that you and I traveled. I was a high school coach for 11 years, so I know what it was like to mop the floor, to wash the uniforms, to dry them, to fold them, towels, you know, get everything ready for the next day. But I did it, me and maybe one of my assistants. You probably did all of that same thing. Some of the coaches that are listening to us now, you know, they only see Tad Boyle as he flies in on a jet and, you know, recruits at the school, and you get back on that jet and you go back to Denver and then drive over to Boulder. They don't know what you have to go through as a high school coach. Kind of describe what the your days were like as a high school coach.
Yeah, and Dave, you're exactly right. And they were a little atypical, because my assumption, did you teach at the school that you coached at?
Oh, yeah.
You're a teacher as well.
Oh, yeah.
See. And so for my situation, it was a little different, because I was in the business world. And then I would show up at the gym, you know, at 3:30, and then I didn't know if, you know, a young man's girlfriend broke up with him that day, or I didn't know if he flunked a test or he got in trouble, you know, at the lunch line, you know. So I would come in, and I'd have to get a feel for those young men in a very short period of time, because I was only with them for a couple hours during basketball practice. And but you're exactly right. I coached six years of high school basketball. Only three of those were as a head coach. The other two, one is a JV coach, and I started at the sophomore level, which was the absolute worst level, because, you know, if any of your good players are sophomores, they're going to be moved up to the JV team. And I was left with, you know, kind of what was left over. But it's amazing how you learn, you know, as a coach. And you mentioned Larry Brown and what a great teacher he was. And I wasn't a teacher by trade like you were. Or like really Coach Brown was. I mean, he was a born teacher. I had to learn that. I had to learn how to teach and how to, you know, I'd played the game at a high level, but I had never taught the game. And so those 6 years as a high school coach really, really helped me. And I look back on those times, and I feel sorry, quite frankly, for the young men that I coached, because I was just learning. I didn't know. I knew the game, but I didn't always know how to communicate the game. And so every time I run into one of those young men, and I run into them, you know, from time to time, you know, around the community or at speaking engagements, and I always apologize to them, you know, because I wasn't as the kind of coach that they probably deserved at the time, but I was just young and learning. And that's I think when you are a young coach, you have to be patient with yourself, and you've got to be a lifelong learner. But I was just starting my trek then. But you're exactly right. When you start at that level, you have an appreciation for every high school coach and every high school gym you walk into, and not just the high school coach, but the JV coach and the sophomore coach and the team managers, and you know as well as I how many people it takes to have a successful program.
And so, you take this at Mark Turgeon's urging, you take this $16,000 a year job, and you go out to Oregon, and you're coaching under a native North Carolinian that I know very well, Jerry Green. Jerry was also a high school coach in Gastonia, North Carolina, when I was at Durham, North Carolina. So I know Jerry. He was an excellent coach, and you go in there and you're coaching under him, and you have that Oregon experience, and you go to the NIT tournament, and then you follow him. He gets a job at the University of Tennessee. You go there, and you guys did really, really well. You're director of basketball operation. They're a little bit of a promotion. You win 20 games at Tennessee, and you make the NCAA tournament. Tell us about the experience with Coach Green at those two stops.
It was great, and I mentioned Mark Turgeon because Mark was the one that kind of sold me to Coach Green, because Coach Green didn't know me from Adam. He knew that I played at Kansas, but we really didn't have a relationship. And Coach Turgeon said, "Listen, Coach Green's a good man, and he's a good coach, and we got it. We got some really good young players at Oregon. We got a chance to be successful." So, he kind of sold Coach Green on me, and he's also sold me on Coach Green. And I was with Coach for 4 years, three at Oregon and one at Tennessee, and I learned a lot. I mean, he's a very good coach, and a guy that I learned a lot from. And quite frankly, it was my connection. I had a connection to Kansas and playing for Larry Brown, who was a North Carolina player. But, Coach Green, like you said, was a high school coach, extremely close with Coach Williams there at Carolina. And so I learned the Carolina way, or the Carolina system. And I'll never forget, Dave, you make $16,000 a year. You don't go out to lunch. You bring your peanut butter and jelly sandwich and your potato chips, and maybe go down to the drinking fountain for water, because you're not going to buy a bottle of water. And I'd sit in the office every day at lunch and work. And one day, secretary's out, everybody's out, and the phone rings, and I pick up the phone, and I kind of recognize the voice on the other end, but it was Dean Smith. And Coach Smith was calling for Coach Green just to check up on him, and then he says, "Well, who am I talking to?" I said, "Well, this is Tad Boyle." He says, "Hey, Tad, this is Dean Smith, the University." I said, "Yeah, Coach, I kind of recognize your voice, And and he was at. He said, "How's your 22 defense doing?" And right away, that 22 defense was Carolina's half court man to man, and it's like we picked up. I'd worked for Coach Green for a year or two, but the terminology that we used at Oregon was exactly what Coach Smith had used, at North Carolina, and so it's really neat to have a piece of that tradition. I'm certainly not a North Carolina native. I didn't play there. I didn't grow up there. But I always feel a connection because I worked for Jerry Green for 4 years, and that's really kind of neat.
Let's talk about your head coaching experience. You went to Northern Colorado first, and I don't know if there was a program in the country that was in worse shape than Northern Colorado when you got there. I was just reading up on what they were like. You take the head coaching job there, and you help the program transition from being a Division I into Division I in your first season. You go 4-24. It had to be a nightmare to try to get that thing turned around. You were the last team in the RPI rankings, but over the next two seasons, you begin to win some games. 13 the second season, 14 the third. Then you get into your fourth year in Northern Colorado, won a school record 25 games, made the quarterfinals of the College Insiders Tournament. And, a lot of accolades came your way. They justifiably should. What was life like as the Northern Colorado head coach?
Well, you mentioned, coaching high school basketball and having to turn on the lights and sweep the gym and, you know, get I didn't have to fold the towels, though. I didn't have to do that, but I did have to turn on the lights and sometimes sweep the gym, or my assistants would. But it was a great experience as a first-time head coach. And again, I go back to my high school coaching days. It really helped prepare me. Now, I was in my hometown. I was in very familiar surroundings. There were some faculty members that were colleagues of my father. So it was a very comfortable environment for me, but one where I felt like I had to succeed. Like, and I was almost coaching, you know, for my father's legacy. I felt like that when I'd go to the office every day. Because my dad, I lost my dad my senior year of my high school season in December 10th, 1980, right in the middle of my senior year. And he was a professor on campus. So now here I am as the head coach of that university where my dad taught, and in a gym I grew up in, basically going and riding my bicycle like I'd mentioned. So we're 4-24 after that first year, and there's I think there were 323 or 326, I forget how many Division I teams that year. But, Dave, you're exactly right. Our RPI at the end of the year was dead last. And I remember I cut that out, and I pasted it on my desk, and I pasted it on my bathroom mirror at home. I gave it to every one of my assistant coaches. Had it put up in the weight room. I wanted our players and coaches every day to say, listen, this is where we are, this is who we are, but this is not where we're going to stay. And making the transition from Division II to Division I for a lot of schools is a huge jump, a huge leap. Financially, budget-wise, it was a big jump for Northern Colorado. And I'm not sure that the administration knew how big a jump it was. But we start recruiting, we start redshirting kids, and lo and behold, you know, 4 years later, we win 25 games. Holy cow, it was as I look back on my 25-plus years now of coaching between college and high school, assistant coaches, the whole deal, I'm not sure I'm more proud of any period of time in my career than I am those 4 years, because that was hard work. And the players that we coached and the development that they made from getting their teeth kicked in as freshmen to now as seniors or redshirt, you know, juniors, to be having the success they had. And then the year after I left, they went to the NCAA tournament. Tremendous pride and sense of accomplishment with that group of young men.
Isn't it true that, you know, as you kind of separate from 1 year and you're on to the next and on to the next and on to the next, the connection that you have in the locker room and on the practice floor sometimes supersedes what happens in the games themselves. I mean, the relationships that you have, if they're proper, it seems to me, like, I know it is with me, The thing, time moves on, and people somehow or another, they may or may not forget about some of the championships and things that you did well while you're there. But, you know, the memories that you have with your players, the things, you know, we're getting ready to have something at Wake Forest, a big reunion coming up. And, you know, I look at some of our players, and I look at them more different than maybe the fans do. I think about them in the locker room and some of the kidding that goes on, or some of the trials, tribulations, things that they have, you know, with maybe their families, and they came to me for, you know, help and answers. I mean, isn't that what coaching's all about, really?
Absolutely. You know, and Dave, I'm so glad you're having a reunion, because those reunions are special. And my guess is when you go back to that reunion at Wake Forest, it's much like, you know, when I go to a wedding of one of our former players there in Greeley at Northern Colorado. And there's, you know, five or six former players there, and you're talking, and you go back to those times, and nobody's talking about how many minutes they played. Nobody's talking about what their shooting percentage was or how many minutes they played or how many games they started. All they're talking about is what went on in the locker room, what went on the bus, what went on at the hotel, what happened on this road trip. Like, it's the memories that are created by the game of basketball and the relationships that are built and cemented by the game of basketball that make coaching so special. And being able to go back to those reunions, or like I say, a wedding, or unfortunately sometimes now, you know, funerals. It's just a connection that coaches and players have, and players and players have. And, you know, you mentioned my relationship with Mark Turgeon. I mean, it's lifelong. And, you know, I know when his kids are born. I know when their birthdays are. I know when they graduate from high school. And that started as teammates at the University of Kansas back in, you know, the mid-'80s. So it's such an important point, because you mentioned it, you know, a lot of people who look at coaches, they think about the games, they think about being on TV, they think about the, you know, all the glitz and glamour. The bottom line is, it's what's happening in that locker room and those relationships with your players that are special and make this such a special job.
Okay, so things go well towards the end there at Northern Colorado, and just up the road you get the call from Boulder. Colorado's the Buffaloes are not doing well in basketball. They haven't found a high level of consistency. They have a good year, and then they fall back. They ask Tad Boyle, a native Coloradan, to come in there and solidify the program, and take it from there. Tell us what it's been like to be in two major conferences. You in the Big 8 there at one time, and I don't know what they're calling now, Big 12, I guess it is.
Big 12,
yeah. Yeah, right, and yeah. Now you go into the – you transition into the Pac-10. So tell us about the experience at Colorado.
Well, number one, there's a little Wake Forest connection, Coach, in that, you know, Jeff Bezdelic, my predecessor here, left Colorado. He's only one of two coaches – to leave on their own terms in recent memory. And the other one was Bill Blair back in the early 80s. But Jeff Bezdelic took the head coaching job at Wake Forest. And I am so fortunate that we had the year we had, because if he leaves a year earlier and Northern Colorado is 16-14, I'm not even considered for this job. But because he left when he did, and we had a 25-win season, and we made the turnaround, and it happened an hour, you know, just up the road, you know, got my name involved in the coaching job here at Colorado. I'm also fortunate that it was a old-fashioned hiring, and what I mean by that is there was not a search firm involved, because a search firm would not have recommended Tad Boyle. They would say, hey, that's too big of a jump. You can't go from the Big Sky in Northern Colorado to the Big 12 and, you know, and the recruiting and, you know, all the stuff that goes with it. He's not ready for that job yet. But there was no search firm, Dave. It was an interview. They basically narrowed it down and, you know, found out who was interested in the job, and they interviewed three guys, and they ended up hiring me. And I was so fortunate. Mike Bone was the athletic director here at the time, who's now at University of Southern California out in L.A., back, you know, in the Pac-12 himself. But I was very fortunate to get it. And then I was also fortunate that Coach Bezdelic had recruited some pretty good players, had kind of built them up. They hadn't broken through yet. But that first year, we win a school record 24 games and go to the Final Four of the NIT in New York City. And I look back, and I don't know what your feeling is. I'd like to get your feeling on this as a coach. But I think sometimes in your early phases of rebuilding a program, going to the NIT is more valuable than and making a run and getting to New York City and playing in Madison Square Garden. It's more valuable than going to the NCAA tournament and playing one game and getting beat and being out. I think your players learn how to win postseason games. They again have a lot of fun, and again, school record 24 wins. But I'll tell you a quick story about that first year, and this is not in any coaching 101 book. I've never had to deal with it since, and I hope I never have to deal with it again. But we had won five games against top 25 opponents that first year at Colorado. We beat K-State three times, who had a heck of a team. Very well coached by Frank Martin. We beat Texas, who was a top five team at the time. We beat Missouri, and we made it to the semifinals of the Big 12 tournament in Kansas City and lost to KU by 7 points, I think it was. And didn't even enter my mind that we weren't going to get an NCAA tournament bid. And so we come home, and we have the team over to my house, and we have some boosters over, and our athletic director, and our, you know, chancellor. Media's in there, the TVs, radio stations, and we're sitting there watching a selection show, and Colorado, the name doesn't come up. And so I'm sitting there in my living room with our team, with the media, with our administration, and nobody knows what to do or what to say. I've never been more disappointed and crushed in my life for a group of young men. And I took them down in the basement, and I said, guys, I don't know what just happened, but we're not going to the tournament. But guess what? We're going to be in the NIT, and we got to make a run. And, boy, we sure did. We lost to a really, really good Alabama team in the semifinals.
Well, you're talking to somebody who's I was lucky enough to coach three teams that won the NIT. And I had people that say, well, that was NIT stood for not important tournament. And anytime I heard that, I fought them because I agree with you. Going, spending that 2 to 3 weeks, and it's actually 3 weeks of extra practice, of bonding together, of being on the road. And 1 year, I asked the committee to send me on the road the whole time, and we won the darn thing. So I agree with you. I think it's really important.
And that's what poised us for the next year, Dave, because the next year, you know, we win 24 games again. We win the Pac-12 because we moved from the Big 12 after that first year to the Pac-12. And first year in the Pac-12, we win the Pac-12 tournament and go to the NCAA tournament now and beat a UNLV team in the first round, and then lose to Baylor. You know, it was a tie game with 3 minutes to go. I mean, we were within the eyelash of being in a Sweet 16, but we don't have that year, in my opinion, unless we go to the Final Four of the NIT the previous year. And so that's where I think the value of that tournament. And there, you know, we've played in it two or three times since we've been here. There's a lot of good basketball teams. Last year, we played Dayton in the NIT. It was a high-level basketball game. That was two NCAA tournament teams. And now here we are, Dayton's, you know, in the top five or top 10, and we're a top 20 team. And here's two teams that were hooking it up in the NIT last year. So it's good basketball, and I think that tournament does not get its due.
That's good perspective. Look, one thing as we wind down now, one thing I want to talk to you about. You are the chair, current chair of the NCAA Rules Committee. I was on that for 8 years when I was coaching. I think that's one of the most important positions or committees that you can be on. It kind of shapes the way basketball is played. Talk to us a little bit about being on that Rules Committee. You're the chair. Why is it so important? And, you know, what do you think of the rules that have been passed and maybe one or two things that you're considering?
Well, Dave, let me just say this. Now, I'm humbled, number one, because it's a committee that I think, like you said, it's helped shape the game. And I take the role very, very seriously, and I have learned so much. Thank goodness, I think the terms are 4 years now, not 8 years. I don't know if I could do eight.
I think it was open-ended back when I was doing it.
But it's a good group of collection of coaches, administrators. You've got Division I guys, Division II, Division III. You've got conference personnel in there, and so you get a lot of different perspectives. And one of the things I appreciate about the committee is that they're very deliberate and they're very slow to make changes. Because look, college basketball is a great game, and it's in a good spot right now, and it has been for years, and certainly it's evolved. And you've seen the committees try to take physicality out of the game and have more freedom of movement, and they're trying to get scoring up to make it more fan friendly. And so the biggest rule change, obviously, we just passed last year was the extension of the 3-point line. And but that decision wasn't made in 1 year. It wasn't like we just got together in the room and say, hey, let's move the 3-point line out. I mean, it's something that the committee had studied and considered well before I got on the committee, and now it became time where we had the data. The NIT that we just talked about extensively, it's a tournament that uses a lot of experimental rules. So it's a great way to experiment with a rule in the NIT or with a preseason exempt event where you can get some data. Like, okay, the 3-point line is going to move out. How much of an effect is that going to have on the game? Well, we had 2 years of data from the NIT games, all the NIT games, and we could study it. And we said, hey, it's only going to move the percentage point down about 1%, and that's been about accurate, maybe 1-1.5%, not a significant change. But maybe it can open up the floor for more drivers, and it can increase scoring. It makes zone defenses maybe, you know, have to extend a little bit. That's an example of a rule that can maybe help the game, but we're very, very deliberate and we try to study it. And one of the things I'm, as the chairman, I just try to, you know, every meeting we have is let's make sure if we make a rule change, it's well thought out. We've got some data behind it, and there's good reasons for it. Otherwise, let's keep the game the way it is, and we got to look at it. We got to always analyze it, but let's be real slow to move. And I think we will be that way as we go forward.
I close up every podcast session by asking the person, Tad Boyle in this case. You're a young coach coming along today. What advice would you, as a head coach at the University of Colorado, talk to somebody who is an aspiring 25, 27-year-old coach who wants to get to be in your place one day? What advice, or maybe two or three things that you would tell them is important today?
The two biggest things I would say is, I would say three. Number one, there's a old coach, you may remember Don Meyer, who's no longer with us. But Don Meyer was a very successful coach at the Division II level. Finished his Northern State there in South Dakota. He always told me, make the job you have the best job there is. And I guess I would tell a young coach they're always looking at the next step, and they forget about you're coaching at, you know, Gastonia High School. Make Gastonia High School the best job in North Carolina, or Greeley Central High School the best job in Colorado. Make where you're at the best job. So don't get ahead of yourself. That would be number one. Number two, build as many deep, rooted, genuine relationships that you can with anybody that you can. Be the kind of person that somebody wants to pick up the phone and help out with. And then number three is continually learn about the game of basketball and how to teach it and how to coach it. And I think the relationships will translate to recruiting. I think knowing the game will translate to helping your team be successful. And making the job where you're at, wherever it is, the best job, you know, in your league or in your state. Those are the three things I would say to a young coach.
Thanks, Tad. I appreciate that. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. And also especially to Coach Tad Boyle. I know you've been busy. You've taken some time away from your office and also your team to join us and to share some memories that you've had in along the way, you know, Greeley High School and Northern Colorado, and today your team is doing so well out on the West Coast, and you're a factor every night you go in. That's got to make you feel really, really good. So good luck to you and your team. We'll be following you from afar for the rest of the year. You're a real champion, Tad, and a real tribute to college basketball. And I want to tell the fans that to learn more about the NABC, visit nabc.com.